Welcome to Lead Follow, a podcast for pastors and leaders, hosted by MCUSA Executive Director Glenn Guyton. Join Glenn as he talks to folks across the denomination to help equip today's leaders who are leading while following Jesus.
Hello, my name is Glenn Guyton, and during this season of Lead Follow, we will be exploring ways to reimagine church. Today, I am pleased to welcome Shannon Dykus, who will discuss holistic discipleship. Shannon is a pastor and an educator. She leads the student life and DE&I divisions as the Vice President for Student Affairs, Equity, and Belonging at Eastern Mennonite University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And she is on the steering committee of Mennonite Church USA's Women in Leadership Project. Welcome, Shannon.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's good to see you.
You know, this is the version of Club Shay Shay, I guess, since I have Shannon here. the Minnow Club Shay Shay. I don't know if our viewers know what that is.
No, but, they don't, but it's okay. We're going to do it.
This is our version, though. This is the Holy, the Anabaptist version,
it
I
is.
Should say. Well, I am so glad to connect with you today and have you here and to be here on the campus. We're actually at EMU.
You are.
Today.
Welcome.
So, thank you. I've been on this campus many times, so it's great to have the opportunity to talk to you today. Yeah. But we're going to start off with a question. So we're thinking about or discussing reimagining church. So reimagining an organization involves transforming how it operates, thinks, and achieves its goals. It's about taking a fresh, innovative approach to every aspect of the organization to enhance its efficiency and adaptability and overall success. So as you think about Mennonite Church USA, if you could reimagine one thing, what would it be and why?
That's a big question.
It is a big question. But you have a big brain, so I know you can do it.
Well, and, you know, the church is asking those kind of big questions in the same ways higher education is asking those big questions. So I feel like I've been in the headspace of what does it mean to reimagine higher education and church right now. We've leaned into a type of zero-based thinking where you just kind of take everything that you've been doing, throw away, and start from scratch and say, what is it that we hope to do, what are our outcomes, what are our mission, and how do we build from there? And so when I think about that type of approach and the church, I ask myself, what is it that the church is actually, just what's the primary outcome? What's the primary mission? And when I think about that question, I wonder what it means for church to just to step outside of what we've always done on Sunday mornings in the traditional ways and say, what are the things that get us to joy and peace and generosity? And how do we elevate the communities that are doing that? And whether that's people who are in a building on Sunday morning or whether that's people who are in a coffee shop on Thursday afternoons, like what does it mean for that to be MCUSA? And you don't have to be a church doing this with a Jesus picture on the wall.
Okay,
but
right.
So, I mean, if we're gonna do it and say, here's what we want to be the outcome, why can't it happen in all kinds of different ways?
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I mean, do you think the church, and so you work here at the school and universities are really traditional.
Yes.
So this zero-based thinking, mm-hmm. I mean, do you think the church can get to that point, especially like the Mennonites, right? That we have this strong ethnic identity, these traditions that we're wrestling with, but can we get to the place where we can really just kind of start over?
So here's what I am most present to. The energy of our young people mm-hmm. will draw us to new ideas in ways that we may not be ready for, but we got to get ready for.
Yeah.
We're seeing it in our political landscape right now. We got to get ready for new thoughts, for new people, for new spaces. And Gen Z is going to push us to be able to say, no, how do we do this differently? And I think if we really want to be faithful people, we'll listen and we'll follow.
Okay. Well, I hope the people that are listening to this really kind of pick up on those things. I think one of the reasons why we started this initiative of reimagining church is really for us to think differently. We can't continue to do the same things that we did when the denomination was formed in 2001. It's 2024. We've been through the global pandemic. And, you know, all of us have to change. All of our institutions are changing. The schools are changing. And so I think it's really important that we adapt and adopt some of the things that you talked about and listen to the young people.
We have to.
Yeah.
And they're so wise.
Yeah. They are. They have energy.
They do.
I think that's the piece. They have energy. All right. So just talk. I want to talk a little bit about your role and the things that you focus on. And one of the things I know you focus on is holistic discipleship. And again, I want you to continue to think about this reimagining theme. But what does holistic discipleship look to you look like to you?
So in my professional role here at EMU, I get to lead the student life team specifically that does a lot of the coming alongside what's happening in the classroom. And so the ways that we are creating community in our living spaces and our residential halls, or the ways that we're developing spiritual formation and worship services, or the ways that we're supporting students who are doing health and mental health care, like we recognize that in order for students to do well, they need to be well. And so the ways that we have professionals and programs that help support that means that we are trying to come alongside academics with this holistic approach and say, you're a whole person. And as you're learning, you're growing and being supported and being formed in very intentional ways. So that's part of how it shows up just in my role, but it shows up in who, in the type of education that we know that we're trying to provide here in EMU. We want to develop whole people that can go out and be leaders that are emotionally well and spiritually well and are really smart. So it's an extension of the type of education that we're hoping to provide here at EMU.
I like how you break that down. You say you want to have these students be emotionally well and spiritually well. And I think for some periods, we thought those were the same things.
Yes.
Say a little bit more about that. Like maybe what's the disconnect, at least as you've seen it?
Yeah, so when I think a little bit, so I'm gonna pick a different part of my brain. So I'm a trained spiritual director.
Okay.
And so in some of my spiritual direction work, I work with people on just what some of their spiritual goals are. And for so long, we've only thought about that in the ways that like, how is my relationship with God?
Right.
But to be well, to be whole means we're thinking about like how we are, like our well-being. For so long, our spirituality has disconnected our feelings and our bodies, and we are only thinking with our hearts. Like spirituality has only been about, and so part of the work that I do there is like, what does it mean to be holistic, to be integrated, to be interconnected between our spirits and our bodies and our minds, and letting those all inform each other. So yes, for so long, spirituality has not been embodied, has not been emotionally connected, because we just think, okay, it's just you and God gonna tell you what to do, and you gonna go out in the world and do it. But what does it mean to be our whole selves?
Yeah. I like that, this holistic approach to our faith and spirituality. I have seen the disconnect, and it's just, you know, when you first get into church, depending on when you, like I grew up in the church, but then you get to this point where you just, okay, I just need to be just holy. But
yes.
What does that mean, right?
Exactly.
How can you be holy if you are thinking about, hey, I don't have enough to eat,
or exactly,
I'm being emotionally abused. And you can't just tell somebody like that, hey, just go pray just about go it.
Exactly.
That's not going to stop the abuse. I mean, yeah, well, let me clarify that, because prayer is good, right?
It is.
But it doesn't always just help you deal with the immediate needs, right? You know, long term, you know, God can intervene, but maybe part of that intervention is this holistic approach to taking care of ourselves and walking alongside the person.
It is.
I think that's key. You know, you remember that old Footprints poem we always talk about, Jesus carrying you, walking alongside. I think we forget that, though.
We do.
Forget that we need somebody to walk alongside of us in this journey.
Yeah, we don't do it on our own.
Yeah.
But there are things we can also do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think this next generation is more needy than we are, or were we just emotionally turned off?
Man, that's a really good question. What I've found is that some of the next generation, they are more articulate, they're more honest, they're more upfront. I think that some of the data that's coming out right now is that there is there's more just mental health needs in younger people right now. And I'm not sure that that's actually true. I think they're just talking about it in better ways.
Yeah.
I think that the same mental health needs that have existed in older generations are still true. And they have the language and they have the courage and they say, I need help.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the impacts of the pandemic. People realize I gotta say when I need help. And
yeah.
they've learned how to do that in a way that others of us have hidden it.
Yeah, we didn't do that.
No,
yeah.
we weren't taught how to do that.
Yeah.
We weren't given permission to do it. And now they're all the way in.
Yeah. Some of it, I do wonder, though, if I do think they have better ways of articulating it
sure.
than we did. You
sure.
couldn't, I mean, you would be insulted, especially as I think, I mean, as a man, too, I think you would be insulted about showing your feelings or saying that you needed help. But I do wonder if they are overexposed.
Yeah.
To information.
No, I also worry about that.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. And how that becomes burdening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like they have to feel like they have to carry this weight. So now more than ever, I think that it is a time for the church to practice holistic witness, holistic discipleship. And so say a little bit about how we can integrate this with spiritual growth, emotional well-being, and maybe some of the other social practices that we focus on in a church.
Yeah. So I think when we think about holistic discipleship, well-being, it's all about paying attention to all the parts of ourselves. So that spiritual, that emotional, that physical part, and then being able to say, these are all the parts of my relationship with God, not just how I am in my heart. And then thinking about I think for so long, we've thought about our spirituality in very individual ways.
Oh, okay.
And so what does it mean to not just be holistic internally,
uh-huh.
but then holistic well-being draws us to each other. Like, I'm not well if you're not well, Glenn.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what it means to be holistic. And that's what it means to be church.
Ooh. Okay, watch out now.
That the holisticness of who we are means that my well-being and your well-being are interdependent.
Mm.
And so so what does it mean for us to make sure that we are well?
Mm.
It's a movement from making sure I'm okay and the things I need, I have, but it's making sure we are okay and we have what we need. So when we approach ideas like that, we have to start thinking differently about the spaces that we create together. You know, sometimes I think church on Sunday morning is a whole bunch of individual people coming together to do individual things all in one space.
Okay, yeah.
When we think about the way a lot of churches are formed, we got a whole bunch of chairs that are all facing in one direction and listening to one person. And
yes, yeah.
But what does it mean to actually do something together and not
yes.
be individual, singular people, but paying attention to each other. Like, what does it mean to worship in a circle? And like, I'm looking at you and your family and y'all are looking at me and thinking
right.
about what we need. And so how do we think about not just what we're doing, but how we're doing it and the
yeah.
spaces that we're creating together?
Yeah, I like that, how we're doing it. And that's interesting. You know, I wrote this book about just reigniting the church, and I wrote it during
yes,
the
pandemic. Yes.
Yeah, I wrote it during the pandemic, and so it was endorsed.
Okay,
yeah, that's right. that's an interesting thing. Like, you know, how do we do church in a way that, you know, we're caring for each other, and we're not just these individuals. But how do we do it in community? I think that's something that's really missing. So when I was writing a book, this takes me back to my thought. When I was writing that book, my editor was reading it because I talked about attending church. And I realized that her family attended church for a totally different reason than I attended
mm.
church. Her family attended church because it's what you did.
Okay.
You had to show up and be seen
sure.
in church. It wasn't, I think it was probably a spiritual thing to it too, but that was the social club for the community. And I think that it was such a foreign concept to me that I couldn't grasp that. Because, I mean, just from being a African-American black person, you know, church was more family,
yeah.
kind of helping each other. And I'm not saying that other traditions don't have that, but for her, it was more of a kind of country club status symbol. So I wonder if there are more people like that where church is just a thing to do.
Yeah.
You check the box on Sunday. Not saying that you don't have a relationship with God, but it just becomes just
Yeah.
This thing that we do as individuals.
Yeah.
We just show up together as individuals.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a, I don't know, maybe you think it's just a American problem, maybe that's North America, us rugged individualists. Do you think that leads to this?
I don't know. That's a really good question, though.
Yeah.
Like, how is our sense of who we are in this country impacting how we show up in church? I think that's a significant question to ask.
Yeah.
I think that there are many other cultures and many other countries that are more communal than we are.
Yeah, we are.
And
yeah.
So it shows up in their practices differently, and we haven't leaned into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think as we think about this holisticness, and then what you're saying is, you know, if we come to church to be with each other and to care for one another, it means that, like, we listen differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think for so long, what we come to do in our worship spaces is to come in and to figure out what we know and what we believe, and to be certain about, you know, I believe that God is this, and I know that Jesus can do this, and I know that communion is about this. I think if we pay more attention to our whole selves and our whole community, then we don't have to know everything.
Okay.
I think we've become over-reliant on knowing.
Mm-hmm.
But if we lean into community and each other, like, we have to listen. I have to listen to your experience as a black man in America,
right,
in Texas, as a Mennonite, all these things. And, like, I can't know your experience. And so I become curious. I ask questions. And then I trust your experience in a different way, where I don't need to know. I just need to listen. And then our experiences together become how we experience God, instead of needing to say, here are the 8 things I know about God, but here are the 8 things I've learned from my community.
Ooh.
About who God is in their lives.
Yeah.
So
that might be a hard thing for some people.
Yeah.
I think one of the benefits that I get from being executive director is that I get to travel across the country and see Mennonites in different settings. And I said, some of the things that I've seen in this, I won't name the place, but in this part of the world, would make the people on this part of the world, mm-hmm, would make their head spin,
yeah,
because it's so different.
Yeah.
But who am I to say that these people don't love God?
Yeah.
And it really has transformed how I,
mm-hmm,
how I think, mm-hmm, about some of the rigidness that we have in,
yeah,
church, and sometimes the lack of grace.
Yeah.
So how do you care for the whole person? And I don't know. How could we challenge our congregations, even as we come together on Sunday morning, to have more of this zero-based? What would you recommend an exercise? I don't know. I know I'm putting you on the spot. But what could churches do to start to get this kind of, start looking at worship as more of a holistic discipleship opportunity, and maybe start from scratch? Can you think of anything they should do, some strategies that they could try?
So I think that that sometimes we get so caught up in the rituals, the traditions,
mm-hmm,
and the history of what we're doing and why we've been doing it, that we forget, like, what is it that we're hoping to create in the end?
Yeah.
So I wonder if the practice is to slow down, to stop, to take everything off the table, and to ask ourselves again, what is it that we're trying to create in the end?
Yeah.
And then, is there a different pathway to that than the one that we've been traveling? And how do we get, I want to go back to some of the, like, where's the energy?
Mm-hmm.
Is it in our young people? Is it in our communities? Is it, like, where's the energy that then helps us get to this thing that we are trying to create? And how do we then draw that in a way that may not be how we've done it before?
Yeah.
We've got to pay attention to, energy is not in the same place as where it was. So
it's
we've got to go pay attention to where the energy is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. I've read early, you know, I've been doing this for a while. So I remember when there was a struggle thinking about rural versus urban churches, and urban churches, oh, nobody cares about us. No, that's not true.
Yeah.
The energy has shifted.
Correct.
It's not like I didn't move people from the farmland to,
right,
the city.
Right.
That happened. The demographic shifted. And I think one of the things that people don't really think about when you think about the mega church movements, not that I'm endorsing mega church movements, but the reason these churches became mega churches was because the founders of these movements studied demographics.
They did.
They said, hey,
they
it's gonna be a whole bunch of people
that
look like this in this place. Let me create a ministry,
yes,
that fits
meets
that
their
energy,
needs.
That meets their needs, right?
Yes.
And I think we need to do more of that. Not that we neglect these small communities, because they need
sure
church and services too, but it may need to look different.
Sure.
But if there's only, you know, two people in the town, you can't have a church of 500.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think sometimes we don't, this is again maybe the over spiritualization of stuff. We don't look at like, okay, some people moving, there's nobody here, but this church is not going to thrive anymore if there are no human beings right. in this vicinity.
And I was just getting ready to say the same thing. So it's the over spiritualization, and it's the fact that we are a little bit hesitant to use data in our work as the church.
Yeah.
So it's this the spiritual versus academic parts of like, wait, but this data can tell us something. This tells us who's around us. Yeah. And could it potentially tell us where the needs are and maybe even where God is?
Yeah.
But we're a little bit hesitant to let those things speak to each other.
Yeah. Notice as you start talking, the light just hits you.
Yeah.
You're gonna be glowing for the people during this episode. But right. Yeah. I think that's part of the reimagining churches is learning to use all of the available tools to us.
Yes.
We do have data. And again, I'm not saying these mega church movements. I don't think they're inherently bad. I think sometimes, you know, when people get to a certain size, then they start believing the hype, but I do think that those leaders that have been successful follow the pattern, and part of that was looking at the data.
Correct.
Like, what are the people here? What do they need?
Correct.
And how can I connect with that that growing demographic? So, I think we need to just sometimes look at the facts and say, hey, this is where we are, who we're dealing with, the people that are part of this community, and so how can we best meet their needs and walk alongside of them?
Yeah. Yeah, we're in Harrisonburg right now, and Harrisonburg is a perfect example of a city who's drastically different than it was 25, 30 years ago. And paying attention to who are the new populations of people that are here, what are the needs that they're bringing into this community? That's what every other institution is doing. Cities are doing that. School districts are doing that. How do we meet the needs of new young people? And so in a way that is paying attention to also institutional sustainability, how do we pay attention to who's around us?
Right.
It's one of the invitations.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like what you said. I think we should ask ourselves, what are we trying to create in the end? What do we want to happen? And I think we need to be honest about that.
Sure.
I did some training for a congregation once. They said, hey, Glenn, we want you to come in and talk about church growth. How can we grow the church? I said, okay. Here's some things you ought to do. You ought to do, you know, trying to grow the church. But I found out they didn't really just want to grow the church. They wanted more people to look like them.
Correct.
And I said, oh, you should have just said that. But that's a whole different strategy.
It is.
I just want this kind of person to come to the church. I'm not trying to get everybody. I just want this narrow sliver of society to be in my congregation.
Yes.
And I think that's probably in the back of most people's mind.
It is.
Oh, we don't really want to feed those folks. We don't want to sit next to those people. We just want more people to look like us,
yes,
to come from the same social status as us, make the same amount of money as us, and then we'll go out and, you know, throw a few dollars here and there.
Yeah.
And then they wonder why the church is not being successful.
Absolutely. I pastored for several years in a congregation that was mostly homogenous.
Mm-hmm.
And when new people would come in with different identities, you know, they would kind of onslaught those folks with, where are you from or where you work and what y'all do on the weekend. And I had to say in front of the congregation, stop doing that.
Leave people alone.
Because what we're doing is we're highlighting for people the ways that they are different from us.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're creating a barrier between what they think they have to be and who we are as a community. Let them show up as they are. Let them be different. Stop onslaughting them with questions and just be curious and allow people to show up differently. And then we will grow in the ways that we need to grow. But everybody that comes in here can't look just like us.
Right.
And everybody shouldn't look just like us, and that shouldn't be the standard that we're creating as soon as folk walk in the door.
Right. Let me tell you a story. What happens when I go to a lot of churches sometimes? Well, you know, and I'm like just one of the few black people.
Yes.
Yeah, so I go sometimes. Yes. And so for some reason, people feel led to tell me their black stories.
Oh.
You know, I have a black daughter-in-law, or my grandbabies are black, and or, you know, I didn't really understand. Like, this is first time I met you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need you to unload all of your, I don't know if it's racial guilt or
it's
whatever
white
it
guilt.
Is. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but I think we need to be careful about that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get to know people, figure out what's going on with them in their lives before you start unloading your stuff on them. I think
it is.
Yeah,
it
so.
Is. No. And that's part of the conversations that we're also not having in our congregations, mm-hmm. in our communities, to be able to say, how do we show up as humans who know how to interact with difference. Ooh. in a way that doesn't mean like we're creating anxiety, we're prioritizing our own needs, yeah, but like, yeah. What does it mean to just be with people?
Ooh, I like that. What does it mean just be with people? All right, any closing words as we wrap this up, that how we can just empower people to have this holistic discipleship approach?
Be whole. Be a whole person in your body, mm-hmm. in your spirit, in your mind, and let those things be connected to one another, and then recognize that other people are also whole, that there's a physical part to you, an emotional part to you, and the ways that we that really being community means that we are connected to each other.
I like that. And the Bible says that we are fearfully and wonderfully made.
Amen.
Right? Complex beings.
Amen.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Shannon. It was
thank
a pleasure
you, Glenn.
Talking to you. It's been a while since we've talked to each other, but
absolutely.
So good to see you.
Always.
Thank you for your work that you're doing with Mennonite Church USA and Mennonite Women.
All right. Thanks.
All right. All right. If you want to keep up with the latest and greatest that is happening in Mennonite Church USA, subscribe to Piecemeal. Piecemeal is our weekly email newsletter. Subscribe at MennoniteUSA.org/piecemeal. Your financial support matters. Please consider supporting the ongoing work of Mennonite Church USA at MennoniteUSA.org/give. Thank you for joining us.